You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Initiation Science and the Development of the Human Mind, translated by Anna Moise, and it is Collected Works, Volume 228. This is Part 2. Entitled Man is the Image of Cosmic Spirits and Their Activities, Lecture 4 in the series, given in London on the 2nd of September 1923. It is a real pleasure for me to give this talk here in our London branch, after the two conferences in Ilkley and Penmanmar, which have given me great satisfaction. When I gave talks here on earlier occasions, I did mention that when human beings do their daily work here on earth, day after day and year after year, they are able to do so thanks to their physical bodily nature, which was given to them and which connects them physically with their existence on earth. Considering everything which surrounds us here in the physical world during existence on earth, and everything our work contributes to the existing physical world, we must, of course, focus our attention on the time when human beings are awake here on earth. But I also mentioned that what happens to people at the times that they spend in sleep during their life on earth is more important for human existence, and indeed for anything human beings also have the potential to be in their existence on earth. When, at some time or other in our life on earth, we look back on anything we are able to remember, we do really always exclude the times we spent in sleep. We link together everything we have done or experienced during the day in the waking state and make it into a coherent whole, as it were. But this would never exist if the states of sleep did not come in between. To get to know the true nature of the human being, we have to pay attention to these sleep states. For people might easily say, quote, "I do not know anything about what goes on during sleep," close quote. This may seem probable to a superficial view, but it is really untrue when we consider the real situation. We would actually be automatons if we were to look back on a life that was never interrupted by sleep. We would be spiritual, but automatons. The times when we sleep as very young children are even more important than the sleep states that come between our days, for the effects of that infant, sleep, remain for life. We merely add what mind and spirit gain every night in later life to round them off, as it were. We would be automatons if we were to enter wide awake into the world in our infancy, and in such an automatic state, we also would not be in a position to do anything in conscious awareness. Nor would we recognize anything that we did automatically as being our responsibility. When we say we do not remember anything which we have slept through, that is in fact not entirely true. As we look back, with the sleep states always dropping out of recollection, we actually, in looking back on a nothing, see the events we experienced in our waking hours in one way or another, at the points in time when we were asleep. In fact, however, we see nothing at those points in time. If you have a white wall and there is a place on it where there is no color but a black circle, you are also seeing a nothing. You see the dark bit, or if it is not a black circle but a hole with no light behind it, if you like, you will see a hole. You see the darkness. That is how you see the darkness in your life as you look back. The times where you were asleep appear to be life's darknesses, and you call these darknesses capital I. You would not be aware of your I if you did not see these darknesses. You do not owe the ability to say I to yourself to the fact that you have always been working from morning to night. You owe it to the fact that you did sleep. For the I, as we refer to it in earthly existence, is first of all the darkness in life, the emptiness, the non-existence. If we look at our life in the right way, we do not have to say that we owe our self-awareness to the day. We owe it to the night. And so it is really only the night that makes us into real human beings, where otherwise we'd just be automatons. It truly is the case that going back to earlier times in human evolution on Earth, we see that human beings were not automatons, because there were already some differences between waking and sleeping. They were, however, more or less aware of their sleep states, even in their ordinary daytime state of mind. And because of this, their actions, the whole of their life on Earth, was much more automatic than the life which people live on Earth in the present time. We are therefore able to say that our real, true inner I is something we actually do not really bring with us into this physical earth world. We always leave it in the spiritual world. It was in the spiritual world before we came down into earthly existence. It is back in the spiritual world, between our going to sleep and waking up. It always stays in the spiritual world. When we have our present time, conscious awareness as human beings during the day, and call ourselves I, this word I is a reference to something which does not exist in this physical world, though there is an image of it in this physical world. We do not have the right view of ourselves when we say, quote, I am this robust person on earth, standing here as I truly am, close quote. We only have the right view of ourselves if we say, quote, what exists here on earth is an image, truly an image, of our true nature, close quote. To be absolutely correct, we should not regard this entity here on earth as the genuine human being, but only as the image of the genuine human being. This image character can be more clearly understood if we consider the following. Imagine we are asleep. The I has gone away from the physical body and the etheric body. The astral body has gone away from the physical body and ether body. But the I is active in the blood and in the movements of a human being. These activities cease when the I is away during sleep. But the element that is in the blood does continue to be active. The I is not there at all. We only have to look at this physical body, and we have to say to ourselves, quote, what is the situation there when we are asleep? Close quote. The blood must then, too, have something active in it, just as during the day the I is alive in it. The same applies to the astral body, which always lives in the whole breathing process. During the night it leaves the breathing process, but the breathing process continues. There must be something in there as well that acts as the astral body does in daytime life. In sleep life, our astral body leaves the organs in us which are our respiratory organs, for instance. Our eye leaves the powers that make the blood pulsate. Now, what do they do during the night? Well, the situation is that when the individual has been lying in bed, with his eye departing from the blood-pulsating powers, spirits from the next higher hierarchy enter into the blood-pulsating powers, angeloi, archangeloi, and archai, then live in the self-same organs in which the eye lives during the waking hours of the day. And the spirits of the next higher hierarchy are during the night active in the respiratory organs from which we departed, because our astral body has left us, exousiae, dunamis, curiotities. So the situation is that when our eye and astral body depart from our daytime bodily nature, as we go to sleep at night, angels, archangels, and higher spirits, enter into us and give life to our organs while we sleep, until we wake up again. When it comes to the ether body, we are not even able to do what needs to be done in there during our waking hours. The spirits of the highest hierarchy, seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, must be present in it even in our waking hours. They are altogether always present in it. And then the physical body? If we had to manage all the magnificent, tremendous processes in our physical body ourselves, we would not only do this badly, but we would not at all know how to set about it. We'd be quite helpless. The things said about the physical body in external anatomy would not be able to set a single atom of it in motion. This calls for very different powers. These powers are none other than those which have, from time immemorial, been known as the powers of the highest Trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit, the actual Trinity, which dwells in our physical body. So we are able to say that throughout our life on earth, the physical body is not ours. It would not go through its development under our direction. As has been said in ancient times, it is the temple of the Godhead which is a Trinity. Our ether body is the dwelling place of the hierarchy of seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. Those of our organs which are assigned to the ether body must be taken care of also by seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. The physical and ether organs we have, from which the astral body departs during the night, must be taken care of by the second hierarchy, curiosities, dunamis, and exousiae. And those of our organs from which the eye departs must, during the night, be cared for by the third hierarchy, by the angeloi, archangeloi, and archai. So there is a constant activity in the human being which is not only his own effort. He is really only a subtenant in his organism during waking hours. This organism of his is at the same time the temple and dwelling place of the spirits belonging to the higher hierarchies. Giving this our consideration, we can say, quote, we are really only taking the right view of the outer human form when we say to ourselves that it is an image reflecting the activities of all the hierarchies. They are in there. And when I look at this head in its human form with all its details, the rest of the body in its human form, I do not see it in the right way if I say it is this or that entity, but only if I say it is an image of an invisible, supersensible activity of all the hierarchies. Close quote. We have to look at these things in this way before we are saying the right things in detail of something which is otherwise always only presented in a highly abstract way. People say that this physical world is not real. It is Maya, and the reality is behind it. But you cannot do much with that. It is merely a general truth, just like saying that there are flowers growing in the meadow. We can only do something when we know what kind of flowers are growing in the meadow. In the same way, we can only do something with knowledge of the higher world if we are able to show in detail how the higher world is active in something which outwardly appears as an image, as Maya, an echo, a revelation in the physical world which is perceived through the senses. Seen as a whole, therefore, in his life, during the day and also during the night, on earth, man relates not only to his physical environs, which he perceives through the senses when on earth, but also to the world of higher spirituality. A certain, we might say, lower spirituality is active throughout the realms of nature here on earth, the mineral, vegetable, and animal worlds. The actions of the higher spirituality, which influences man, come from the world of stars. Because of his physical existence, the human being as a whole does here on earth relate to the plants and animals, to water and air. And as a whole, The human being also relates to the world of the stars, which on their part are also only image, revelation of something that exists in reality. And it is in reality that those spirits of the higher hierarchies exist. Looking up to the stars, we are essentially looking up to the spirits of the higher hierarchies, which merely let something like a symbolic light of their existence shine out to us, so that in physical existence, too, we get a hint of the spiritual principle that essentially fills the whole of the universe. Here on earth we have a certain longing to really know the mountain, the river, the animal, the plant. And we should really also have a longing to gain genuine insight into the world of stars, as it truly is. In Penmanmar I gave some indications concerning the spiritual nature of the moon, just as it shines down on us from cosmic space at this particular stage of Earth evolution. Looking at the moon, we actually never see the moon itself, but at most only a faint hint where the illuminated sickle continues, just as we do always only see reflected sunlight and never the moon itself. Forces from the universe are reflected back to reach us on Earth, and not something which lives in the moon itself. It is just part, the smallest part, of what belongs to the moon, that it reflects the sunlight down onto the Earth. In reality, it acts like a mirror, reflecting back to us all the physical and spiritual impulses that influence it from the universe. And just as we do not see what is at the back of the mirror, so we never see the inner part of the moon, though there is a genuine spiritual population inside the moon with sublime guiding spirits. Those guiding spirits and the rest of the moon's population have once been here on Earth. They withdrew from the Earth to the moon at a time which was more than 15,000 years ago. Before that, the moon also had a different physical appearance. It did not simply send down the sun's light to the Earth, but blended its own essential nature into this sunlight. Well, this need not concern us so much, but we should be interested in the fact that today the moon is like a fastness in the universe, and in this fastness lives a population which went through human destinies more than 15,000 years ago, and has withdrawn to this moon with the spirits that guide humanity. There was a time in the past when advanced spirits existed on Earth, who did not assume a physical human body as we do now, but lived more in an etheric body. Yet they were, nevertheless, the great teachers and educators of humanity at that time. These great teachers and educators of humanity, who at one time brought original wisdom to human beings on Earth, sublime original elements of wisdom worthy of our admiration, with the Vedas and Vedanta only echoes of them, live inside the moon today, and let the things that live outside of the moon in the universe shine down onto the Earth. Something of those moon powers has remained behind on Earth, but those are only the physical powers of procreation for human beings and animals. Only the outermost physical aspect remained behind, when in ancient Atlantean times the great teachers of humanity followed the moon, which had even before that withdrawn from the Earth. Looking up to the moon, we therefore see the reality of it only if we understand that sublime spirits who were once connected with the Earth are today making it their task to reflect back onto the Earth not what they bear within themselves, but such physical forces and spiritual powers as are mediated in the universe. Anyone seeking to gain initiation wisdom today must above all also seek to include in this initiation wisdom the things that the moon spirits are able to tell them, being endowed with higher powers. Well, that is one figure, as it were, out there in the universe, a colony, a settlement, Others are equally important, especially those which are part of our planetary system. I'd say that at the other pole, the other extreme, with regard to this importance for us human beings on Earth, is the population on Saturn. The Saturn population was not connected with the Earth in the same way as the Moon population. There was a connection, and you can read about this in my title, Occult Science, An Outline, also known as An Outline of Esoteric Science. But the Saturn spirits are not connected with the earthly sphere in the same way as the Moon spirits, for they do not reflect anything which exists in cosmic space. We get scarcely even physical sunlight reflected by Saturn. The planet travels slowly around the sun like a solitary, not very luminous hermit. Yet everything external astronomy can tell us about Saturn is just the very least of it. The significance which Saturn has for humanity on Earth shows itself every night, but only as an image, and particularly also in the life between death and rebirth, when human beings pass through the spiritual and hence the star world. I have spoken of this before in a lecture I gave to this branch. Human beings do not meet the actual Saturn at the present stage of human evolution, but do, nevertheless, meet with the Saturn spirits in a roundabout way. I will not go into this today, but the point is that the spirits who dwell inside Saturn have reached a very high level of perfection, extreme sublimity. These spirits have a direct inner relationship to seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. Seraphim, cherubim, and thrones are really the spirits of the hierarchy right next to their own. These spirits, this population of Saturn, really do not let anything shine down from Saturn to Earth, and do not give human beings anything from the outer physical world. On the other hand, the Saturn spirits retain cosmic memory, cosmic remembrance. Everything which the planetary system has gone through physically and spiritually, anything which spirits in our planetary system have lived through, is faithfully retained as memory by the Saturn spirits. Those spirits are always looking back on the whole life of the planetary system in remembrance. We look back on the whole of our narrow life on Earth in memory. Saturn spirits have, together in their activities, cosmic remembrance of everything which the whole has gone through, and also every individual entity in the planetary system. And all the powers which live in this remembrance are alive for human beings, because they connect with these Saturn spirits between death and rebirth. And in image form, actually also every night. It is thanks to this that the powers which come from those Saturn spirits, which actually represent the most profound inner life of the planetary system, are active in human beings. Memory is the deepest innermost part of us, when on Earth and in Saturn there really lives the deepest innermost cosmic eye of the whole planetary system. It is because these activities exist in human beings that events come in life, most of the significance of which does not come to awareness, which, nevertheless, play the greatest imaginable role in the life of a person. Most of what we are aware of in life is actually the least that there is in life. When there is some major event at some point in life, you have, for instance, met someone with whom you will then be together for the rest of your life, or some other truly significant event, and you look back from this point, you will find that it strikes you that it is like a plan which has been guiding you toward this event for a long time. It is sometimes possible with something which comes up in your 30th to 50th year to go back through your life, and you'll find, quote, "Yes, it was actually when I was 10 or 12 years old that I started on the road to this event. Everything that came later went in such a way that I finally ended up with this event." Close quote. People who have grown old and then look back on their life, find, if they are thoughtful, their way about in life to such effect that they are able to say, quote, there we have such a subconscious connection. Unconscious powers compel us toward the one event or another, close quote. These are the Saturn powers, powers implanted in us because we relate, in the way I have indicated, to the population which is inside Saturn. Now, if on the one hand, only the physical powers of procreation exist on Earth, as having remained behind from the Moon, then, on the other hand, the most sublime powers, relating to cosmic morality, are on Earth, thanks to Saturn. Saturn is the great equalizer for all events on Earth, whereas the Moon powers, as they are now on Earth, have to do only with heredity from the father, mother, and so on. The Saturn powers relate to what lives in karma in our human life, passing from incarnation to incarnation. And the other planets are in between, mediating the physical and the most sublime moral principle. Between the Moon and Saturn, we then have Jupiter, Mars, and so on. They have their own way of conveying the things which the Moon and Saturn, the outermost extremes, bring into human life. The Moon, because its spirits have withdrawn, leaving only the physical aspect of activities on Earth, the physical power of procreation, and Saturn as the most sublime moral justice in the universe. The two act together, and the other planets, between the two of them, interweave the one element and the other. Karma mediated by Saturn, physical heredity mediated by the Moon. They alone show how, in progressing from one life on Earth to another, human beings are connected with the Earth itself, and with all that exists in the universe, outside the Earth. It is understandable that modern physical science, being concerned only with earthly existence, really can say only very little about the human being. There is much about the powers of heredity, but no realization that they are powers left behind by the Moon. Physicists do not know how to relate them to their activities outside the earthly sphere, nor that karma also influences human life as the destiny that continues from one life on Earth to the next, and that the spirits which bear within them the great remembrance of the whole planetary system and its events are sending their pulses through it, just as the blood pulses through us as physical human beings. Let us look into ourselves. We are human beings only because we have memory. Looking at the planetary system, with all that goes on in it, both physically and spiritually, we must say, if we want to attain to initiation wisdom, the whole of this planetary system would really have no inwardness if the population of Saturn did not all the time preserve the memory, the past, of this planetary system, continually also letting the powers which grow from such preservation of the past enter into humanity, so that all these human beings live from one life on Earth to another in a living, spiritual, and moral, causal connection. In life on Earth, human beings are, in their relationship to others, kept within narrow limits for the things they do consciously. If they consider, however, what they go through between death and rebirth, their relationship to others is within a wider compass, those others then also being out of body, not within a physical body. Yes, between death and rebirth, human beings are at one time closer to the Moon influences, we may say, at another time, closer to the influences of Saturn, Mars, and so on. But one kind of power always influences the other powers through cosmic spaces. Here on Earth, we can only do things as one human being to another through narrowly confined Earth spaces. Between death and rebirth, our actions extend from planet to planet. The universe truly is the arena, then, for human activities, and also the relationships between human beings. One human soul might be within the Venus sphere, the other within the Jupiter sphere, between death and rebirth. But their interactions are of greater inwardness than is possible on Earth, where the degree is limited. Between death and rebirth, vast cosmic distances are called into the arena of interactions between human souls. And the spirits of the higher hierarchies also act through such vast spaces. Because of this, we can speak not only of the actions of individual kinds of spirits, let us say the Venus or the Mars population, but also of a continuous to and fro of powers or forces between the Mars population and the Venus population in the universe. Everything that thus happens in the universe between the Mars population and the Venus population, all the interactions, everything that lives in the cosmos, in the spiritual cosmos, as the mutually fructifying acts of Mars and Venus, also relates to the human being. Saturn memory relates to human karma. The physical moon powers that were left behind relate to the physical powers of procreation. And the hidden things that happen all the time between Mars and Venus relate to human speech and language here on Earth. Purely physical powers would not enable us to speak. The power of speech also shines out from the essential nature of the human being, which has its existence from life on Earth to life on Earth, which has its life between death and rebirth. During the time when we live as spirits between death and rebirth, we also enter into the mode of action which is so fructifying between Mars and Venus, between the Mars population and the Venus population. These powers which shine out in the one direction and the other, this way of working together, has its influence on us in our life between death and rebirth. It then comes to fruition in the physical image. This is the element which enters into our organs of speech and song, coming from the most inward development as human beings. We would not be able to speak using our organs of speech and song if they were not physically stimulated by the powers that we take in with the depths of our being between death and rebirth from something which goes to and fro between Mars and Venus in the cosmos. In the things we do every day, we are thus under the influence of the powers of the stars, seeing only their signs as we look up to them in wonder and awe. One has to know that the stars, shining down on us from space, are really only the characters, signs, representing the most universal spiritual activity that lives in us, and of which we are the image. Only if we do so can we look up to the stars in the right way. An earlier humanity could use an atavistic clairvoyance to gain such vision. But that way of looking has gradually faded away. Human beings could not have grown free if they had stayed with the old way of seeing. This turned dark, and instead the mystery on Golgotha entered into life on earth. A sublime spirit from the sun population could give human beings not immediate awareness of what is going on in the world of the stars, but the powers needed for gradually gaining this kind of conscious awareness. The situation, therefore, was that, to begin with, at the time when the mystery on Golgotha took place, an ancient, hereditary, Gnostic wisdom existed, which allowed people to grasp the mystery on Golgotha. This vanished in the 4th century B.C. The power which had come to earth through the Christ has remained. And human beings can bring this power to life in themselves by taking up what the more recent spiritual science can say, and opening their eyes again to the spiritual worlds. This I, E-Y-E, for the spiritual worlds will mean many things for the human race of more recent times. It is, after all, a strange thing that the people who still have something of the old instinctive wisdom, which in the best sense of the word is no longer right for our time and must be superseded by a conscious wisdom, that the people over yonder in the Orient, who have retained something of the wisdom in all kinds of different regions in Asia, and are the educated people, the scholars there, are really looking down on Europe and America in a disparaging way. They are convinced that even in its present state of decline, their ancient Asian wisdom, or really rather the bits and pieces of it, are still better than all the things that make Western civilization so arrogant. And it is certainly interesting that it was possible for such a book to appear like that of an Indian in Ceylon, entitled The Culture of the Soul Among Western Nationals. This Sinhalese Indian is telling the Europeans nothing less but, quote, "Since the Middle Ages, your knowledge of the Christ has become extinct. You do not have any real knowledge of the Christ today, for only someone who is able to look into the spiritual world can have genuine knowledge of the Christ. So you will have to ask teachers to come from India or Asia who will teach you Christianity." Close quote. You can read in that book how a Sinhalese Indian is telling the Europeans, quote, "Ask for teachers to come from Asia. They will be able to tell you about what the Christ really is. Your teachers in Europe do not know anything about it anymore. From the end of the Middle Ages, you have lost your knowledge of the Christ." Close quote. And this is what matters, that the Europeans and Americans do indeed find the courage, again, to look to those spiritual worlds where knowledge of the Christ, Christ wisdom, can be gained again. For the Christ is the Spirit who came down from spiritual worlds into existence on earth. This can only be understood in its true depth by grasping it in the Spirit. It will be necessary for human beings to learn to see themselves truly as an image of higher spirits and spiritual influences here on earth. They can best do this by really taking in the kind of views like those I put before you at the beginning of today's talk, where human beings eventually look at the emptiness in their temporal life and grow aware that the I, capital, does not actually come down from the spiritual world, and that the human being is mere image in the physical world, with the I not present in the physical world. They see a hole, as it were, in time, and this hole really seems dark to them. It is to this that they say, I. Human beings should therefore be aware particularly of the most significant fact, that when remembering, they must look back on their life and say to themselves, quote, "Yes, going back in memory, I see the events of the day, but darkness always appears in it like a hole. This darkness is what I call I in my ordinary state of mind, but I must become aware of something else." Close quote. I have summed up this something else in a few words that may be taken to heart by everyone today as a kind of meditation, to find the I by more and more often bringing the words to life in us, which I would wish to put in this way, quote, "I look into utter darkness. A light shines out, light that is alive. Who is this light in the darkness? It is my true and real I. This does not enter into life on earth. I am just an image of it. But I shall find it again when, with good will for the Spirit, I shall have gone through the gate of death." Close quote. We can enter into such a meditation again and again to face the darkness and understand clearly that on earth we are really only the image of the part of our true nature which never comes down into earthly existence, but that with good will for the Spirit, a light can arise in the darkness, and we may admit to ourselves, quote, "We ourselves are this light in our reality." Close quote. The end of Lecture 4 and the end of Part 2.